2017 Pro Bowl vote is here. It's time to vote for the NFL's best players to earn their spot at Pro Bowl, where the best meets the next. Help your favorite player earn a coveted spot on the Pro Bowl roster. Vote today at NFL.com/Pro Bowl vote.
And now, Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks.
What's up, everybody? DJ Bucky here. Move the Sticks. Reggie Wayne going to join us a little bit later on in the show to revisit a college game that had particular significance to both Bucky and to Reggie.
It didn't have a lot of significance to me. It's just another game. I'm on to the next. We play Virginia this week.
Yeah, that's going to be a fun conversation. I'm looking forward to Reggie. Maybe wearing some Carolina blue in here.
I actually forgot, but maybe I can teach him the fight song.
Okay, maybe work on that.
I'll work on
something to look forward to at the end of this episode. But Buck, before we get to the college and recapping a little bit of what happened there on the weekend, let's run through some of these NFL games from Sunday and from this week and what happened there. First of all, let's start with the Monday nighter and Arizona Cardinals. I don't know if the Cardinals, you know, have turned the corner or if the New York Football Jets are just this bad. What's your take?
I mean, the Jets are always going to have a problem as long as their quarterback turns the ball over and they're not productive in the red zone. I think the bigger thing in this game is looking at the Cardinals' offense and seeing that they probably should make David Johnson the focal point. I know so much of the conversation around the Cardinals' offense in the past had been about Carson Palmer being an MVP candidate. But when I look at David Johnson is a complete back, maybe the second best back in the game behind Le'Veon Bell. But being able to build the offense around him, whether it be as a runner or as a receiver, allowing him to utilize all his unique talents, because I believe he is the one player on their team that can command the attention to allow everyone else to benefit and have one-on-one opportunities.
Yeah, look, I think everything's got to run through him defensively. You know, I'm anxious to see how they, you know, continue to hold up. They're getting some pressure up front, which is nice to see. Seeing some of those ball hawks in the back end make plays, get their hands on some footballs. Geno Smith, by the way, got a cameo in that game, which was interesting to see what they do. I know they've announced, the Jets have announced Ryan Fitzpatrick still the starter, but I don't know if it ends the season like that. And in scouting, a lot of times you always come back to the numbers on the back of your bubblegum card, which I don't think they call it that anymore. But your football card that has all your statistics year after year after year after year. So Ryan Fitzpatrick had kind of an abnormally good year.
Yep.
You should have known if you look at his track record and what he's done throughout his career that it was going
to
come back to the middle, and it's done it this year.
I mean, but that's been his history. That was his history in Buffalo. As soon as they lavished that big contract on him in Buffalo, he returned to being kind of the journeyman-like player that has a penchant for turning the ball over. And so the Jets went all in. They felt like they were close to being able to make a run. They committed $12 million to him on a one-year deal, which was smart because they're not necessarily locked into him. But I think we've seen not only with him and some of the other things that they're trying to do, they're trying to do a makeover while also getting their veterans to maybe squeeze out one last run. And ultimately, I don't think it's going to work out because the pieces just haven't added up. And Ryan Fitzpatrick isn't wholly responsible for that. I don't think Darrell Revis has played necessarily at a high level as a veteran. And some of the other veterans haven't played at the level that they needed to play at to be contenders in the AFC East.
All right, Buck, we're going to get to the Cowboys-Packers because that was obviously a big game and might have something to do with whether or not we see Tony Romo the rest of the year. But one game I want to get to real quick, and that is what happened to the Oakland Raiders going up against the Kansas City Chiefs. Andy Reid coming off of a bye, we know the record there, how great he is. But when I watched this tape, Buck, and broke it down, maybe the hardest thing to find, I always talk about safeties being a hard thing to find in college football. The blocking tight end is probably the most difficult find right now in the college game. And now when you look at the Chiefs and watch them play with what they're doing with their two tight ends, they dominated in the run game. You don't run for as many yards as they did unless you're getting a complete effort up front. Their offensive line is now, I think, one of the better ones in the league. They whipped up on the Raiders, and then on the edge, you should have seen what Kelsey and my name's escaped me, 84 to the tight end. They were ruining Bruce Irvin and company on the edge.
I think it's interesting. If you go back and look at Andy Reid's background, he was an offensive lineman at BYU. When I was with him in Green Bay as a coach, he wasn't responsible for the tight ends. At the time, we had Mark Tremura and Jeff Thomason and some of those other guys. And what you're seeing and what you're describing is a guy who understands the bread and butter of the football team. And that offense – the strength of the offensive line, being able to move bodies off the line, being able to seal the edges with those big tight ends so that their running backs can get going. And when I look at their running back stable, Spencer Ware and Jamaal Charles being able to contribute, the things that they've been able to do in terms of running on the edges, no matter who is back there, Charkantrick West back in the day last year was able to give them contributions. They have just had a very, very solid offense. It's not flashy. It's not spectacular in any way, shape, or form. But what it is a very gritty and productive offense. And when they get it going, they're very, very tough to defend because Alex Smith, to me, is the perfect trigger man for an offense like that because he doesn't make big mistakes.
Demetrius Harris is the other tight end out of Milwaukee, Wisconsin there, or Wisconsin-Milwaukee. So, look, they've done a nice job up front. One of the other guys, though, that I wanted to hit on real quick was kind of a little bit of a sleeper in the draft last year. I loved his tape when I watched it, Bucky, but had some off-the-field issues.
Tyreek Hill.
So I'm going back through my notes. So I've got this up. So any team we're talking about, any game we're talking about, you want to go back and what I had on him note-wise, hit me up. Tyreek Hill, kickoff returner. He's a slot back. As a punt returner, he's elusive, huge burst, multiple punt return TDs. I said he's a poor man's Percy Harvin.
I see some of that when I watch him play.
He's a nice fit for what Andy Reid likes. You think about some of the receivers he's had in the past that can do stuff after the catch. We always talk about it. Your background, Bucky, that Ted Thompson –
with Ron Wolf, it goes all the way back. It goes all the way back. And you have to understand, like, Andy Reid was a coach when I was a player in Green Bay. Ron Wolf was a general manager. Everything that you see there in Seattle and Washington and Kansas City, even with John Dorsey, it all springs from that tree. And one of the big things that we believed in were having receivers who had punt return skill and experience in their background because those guys could thrive in a catch-and-run offense. So for a guy like Tyreek Hill, who is an established punt returner who does some dangerous and explosive things in that phase of the game, it's easy to get him on the field there. But even the other guy, number 12, Alex Wilson, does a great job of making things happen with the ball in his hands. And Jeremy Maclin was an accomplished punt returner. And even DeAnthony Thomas, who doesn't necessarily play a whole lot for them, but all of those guys kind of have
the same –
he
flashed a little bit, by the way.
They kind of have the same traits that you look for at the position. And the Chiefs have assembled a nice team that is kind of solid. Not a lot of superstars, but they can get it done. And, look, Andy Reid does a great coaching job. After the bye week, he gets everybody going in the right direction. They're a dangerous team. And Jamaal Charles is only going to get better and better as he gets more comfortable dealing with that knee.
Yeah. What do you think about that, though, committee-wise? I'm almost thinking as good as they are up front, you've got three different backs, kind of do things a little bit differently. Why? You don't need a lead back. Let's rotate those guys through. Let them just keep the committee rolling.
Well, I think so. And I think as Jamaal Charles gets older, taking some of the load off of him, I believe in the past when he had to do so much, they didn't have the same supporting cast around him. They didn't have Jeremy Maclin at the time. Travis Kelce wasn't a major factor in what they did offensively. They didn't have the other running backs. And what they've done, they benefited. When he went to the sideline, they found some other guys that could step up and do things. I think they have a nice feel for what everyone can do. And I think Andy Reid has been a nice puppet master in terms of getting people in position to make plays and allowing them to play to their strengths.
I just got a text. I'm going to go off script here for a second. Got a text from a buddy, a personnel guy that's at Alabama, looking at their players. Mm-hmm. He goes, Bama, front seven, all 6'3s or higher, which is you're talking about
– big size.
Talking about second-round players. So their entire front seven is filled with guys that are at worst second-round picks.
Oh, I absolutely can see that.
Wow.
Look, it's not a surprise. You watch them play defense on TV copy before you even get to the game copy. They look like a different animal. They're big, they're physical, they can run. They appear to have like a collective high football IQ because the way they play, they have situational awareness. They're able to pattern read in the back end. They're a physical nightmare. And I've heard Nick Saban say this on multiple occasions. He prefers and he skews towards those bigger physical guys up front because he believes that there's a reason why you have weight classes in boxing. Heavyweights knock out middleweights. Mm-hmm. And they are the heavyweight champion of college football. So most teams that they deal with in those physical matches, they overwhelm. And so I'm excited about what Alabama has, but I'm also excited to see what Texas A&M does because typically those kind of teams have given Alabama problems in the past, teams that play at a high tempo, mobile quarterback, playmakers on the outside.
We're going to have plenty of time to get into the college game. That big game Thursday, Buck, we'll do a deep dive on that game. Going back to the NFL, I got us off the side of the road there, Buck. Let's go over to the Cowboys and what we've seen. Zeke Elliott's doing his thing, big game for him. But I want to talk about Dak Prescott, and when I do that, I'm going back through again through my notes. So I'll read you what my notes were on him. This is, again, in an Excel document, so I've taken all my notes from the tape. tried to just fit it in a little line here just so I have some notes when they get picked. Touch, I said he's got touch, a lot of QB runs, quick release, he's got poise. He does sink his base, and the ball will sail on him. I compared him to Brett Hundley. So a couple ways you can look at this. I just so whiffed on this guy, or the Green Bay Packers have maybe one of the greatest hidden gems on their team right now in Brett Hundley. We just haven't got to see him yet, Buck. I'm going to hold on for that. That's my hope right now, that I didn't just whiff on that one, but I'm going back.
Well, I think it's hard.
I gave him a developmental grade, but I put him like in, it's really what it is, third, fourth round type grade. But here's the quarterbacks I had over him. You ready for this?
Ooh.
This is painful. And I only release a top 50, so I'm volunteering this information. Carson Wentz was number one for me. Goff was two. Paxton Lynch was three. Connor Cook was four. I had Brandon Allen at five, who's with the Jags from Arkansas. Christian Hackenberg at six, and then I had Prescott at seven, followed by Cardale and Cody Kessler.
Well, to take some of the pressure off of you, the only one that may be a little out of whack was that I would say maybe Brandon Allen, just for me.
Yeah.
But Connor Cook, I believe, is experienced enough that he was thrust in a situation, in the right situation. I think in Oakland, he could have success playing right away. The big thing that I'll say about Dak Prescott, I think I had a bottom of the second, top of the third round grade on him. But we had to drop him a little bit because he had the character concern about a month before the draft, mm-hmm. The DUI. So that normally dings them a little bit. I loved his intangibles. I thought he had solid leadership skills. I felt like he was a one-man show for a while at Mississippi State. You saw him take them to higher heights. There was a game a couple years ago where they beat LSU where I wrote, and I continue to state this, like he kind of reminded me of – a young version of a Steve McNair in terms of being an unpolished,
rugged
playmaker. Yeah. It's not always going to look pretty. It doesn't always look aesthetically pleasing to the eye, but he finds a way to get wins. And even when you look at him in Dallas, it's not always the prettiest effort. It's not always textbook, but he does a great job of efficiently leading the Cowboys offense. And so I don't know if we will ever say that, look, this is the classic model of quarterback that you want, but I think from an intangible standpoint, he has all of those traits, and because he's on what I would say is a good team with a solid supporting cast, he's thriving.
All right, one thing I went back and looked at, and we talk about this in one of our videos. We got a video up on the success of Dak Prescott. You can find that on NFL.com/MTS video as well as YouTube on the NFL channel. But went back through, Buck, and looked at those first five plays for each game. First five throws, I should say.
Yep.
So you can sort the video, and I just look at those first five throws. What do you think about them trying to get him comfortable in the game? I mean, either play action or boot. The first five games, within the first five plays, the Giants play action first play, Washington boot first play, Chicago play action first play. Then San Francisco, they get him on a boot on the fifth play. Cincinnati boot on the fourth play. Then this last week, Green Bay, here are their first four passes, Buck. A boot, play action, a quick screen out to, I believe it was to Beasley, and then the sprint right option for the touchdown. So they had a lot of him on the move and just getting him into the flow of the game.
Yeah, I think that's important. We've seen it not only with Dak, with some other quarterbacks, and we'll talk about Marcus Mariota later. I think it's very, very important for the play caller to do a great job of getting the guy into his rhythm. And some of that comes through conversations, asking Dak or whoever your quarterback is, what plays do you like? Like, how do you like to start the game? You and I have talked off air about how in college you like to run the option early to try to get that lick, to get the butterflies out. And I think every player has something that gets them going. I think it's a great job by the Cowboys coaches of going to Dak, I'm assuming, and finding out what plays put him in his comfort zone and then allowing him to quickly settle into the game so he can have success.
And other two rookie quarterbacks I want to touch on real quick here. Carson Wentz, not his best game. I thought he missed a couple reads in that game. Still made some big-time throws down the field. They couldn't really get – normally they get the screen game going, and that kind of gets them in a little bit more of a rhythm. They hit some big plays underneath. Mm-hmm. That secondary for Washington did a nice job plastering those wide receivers, and he missed a couple reads, missed a couple throws. So it wasn't his best game. Cody Kessler, the numbers look great on the stat sheet, and when I watched it, Buck, I'll tell you, there was some good when I watched it, no question. You saw somebody that extended plays, did a nice job with that, some accurate touch throws. I still, in some toughness, I give Cody Kessler tremendous credit for hanging in there and taking some big shots in that game and brought him back to have a chance to stay alive in that football game. But I don't see that big-time arm talent that you're looking for. When you watch a Prescott, when you watch a Carson Wentz, you know, obviously you look at the Aaron Rodgers, who's not playing great, but still you see that arm strength. All these guys, they're able to make those throws. I don't know if he's ever going to be able to make those types of
throws. I don't know if he'll ever be able to do that. So for him to have success over a long period of time, he's going to have to be a superb anticipation and
Drew Brees.
Thrower. Yeah. He's going to have to be able to get the ball out of his hands quickly and understand how to place it. I will say that I'm even surprised at the success that he's had. His passer rating is at 95.3. I didn't know if he would have that kind of success. I don't know how great they are on the edges. Terrell Pryor is a real dude. Mm-hmm. He has quickly become kind of Josh Gordon 2.0 in terms of what they had, a big athletic guy that can make some plays. Cody's very good. He understands exactly what his strengths and weaknesses are, and I think he does a great job staying within the line. He colors within the lines. From line of scrimmage to 15 yards, he's very good at getting the ball out of his hands and finding open spaces. If the team doesn't press the receivers where they throw off and disrupt the timing of the passing game, he'll pick them apart. And we've seen him throw those hinge routes on the outside in intermediate things. He gets away with some things because he trusts Terrell Pryor. He'll throw up some 50-50 balls that sometimes I don't like. The thing, if I'm the Cleveland Browns, I'm encouraged because am I saying that Cody Kessler is a franchise quarterback that you can hang in for the next 5-10 years? But I think he may not be that, but I think he's a very solid, serviceable dude that you can kind of use as a bridge quarterback until that guy is available, be it in next year's draft class or the class after that, until you can get a legitimate franchise quarterback. I think he is definitely solid and serviceable enough to man that quarterback position.
Yeah, no question. I don't know if he's – I always come back to the confetti argument. Can you ever picture Cody Kessler with the confetti coming down?
I only can picture him having the confetti fall on him if the supporting cast is stellar. But I think that's
the case for a lot of guys.
I think that's probably about 80% of the league. Is he a guy – I think here's the difference when it comes to franchise quarterbacks. I think if Cody Kessler lands with a good team, if Cody Kessler was with the New England Patriots or Cody Kessler was with even maybe the Dallas Cowboys, I think Cody Kessler could have success. Is Cody Kessler a guy that could go to a team that doesn't have much and make them better? I don't know. But I think in the situation where he's at in Cleveland, surrounded by what he's surrounded by, I think he's been better than advertised, and I think that should be encouraging for Browns fans.
All right, I'm not going to mention a name here, but I'm going to pose you a question. See if you can read between the lines. I think you can figure this one out. Here's your options. Carson Wentz on one hand. That's option number – you're the Cleveland Browns. Carson Wentz or Cody Kessler plus a rangy, athletic pass rusher that maybe wears 15 and plays in the SEC. So you get Cody Kessler plus that mystery man, or you get Carson Wentz. What's the better option for your team?
Well, in hindsight – In hindsight.
It is hindsight. I'm asking you, right, knowing what you know today, what do you think?
In hindsight, I would say that Carson Wentz would have been better than –
than that package.
Than the mystery package and whatever. However, the caveat is, if that mystery package turns out to be a Von Miller-like playmaker, then I think you've maybe netted out. I think it all depends
evened
on –
evened out.
I think it all depends on – how good the mystery package is. What's this? Let's make a deal. If I take door number three.
Yeah.
If I take door number three, door number three just needs to be that nice thing. So we're going to have to wait.
Wait and see what you get there. By the way, I got to go back and look at that trade with the Eagles, because the Eagles got one pick back in that trade for next year.
They did.
So they gave up a two. So they don't have a one next year, and then it's a two the following year. Mm-hmm. But next year, I want to say they get Cleveland's four.
They might get a kick.
Which is going to be the first pick of the fourth round. Almost a third round pick out of that. So,
yeah,
interesting. It'll be interesting to follow that. That'll be one of those trades we look back on many, many years from now and see how it all shakes out. But right now, look, Cody Kessler did a nice job in that football game. Bucky, you mentioned something about Mariota. Tell me what you've seen when you studied him. I didn't get a chance to study that tape from that side of the
ball. Last 2 weeks, Marcus Mariota has posted a passer rating over 100. And I was curious to see, have they done anything differently? And I believe they have. They've used some of the things that he did successfully at Oregon. We've seen him do a little more read option stuff. I've seen some design quarterback runs. They've used the quarterback sweeps. And I know there was that conversation in the offseason, and even when Mike Mularkey got the job, that the mandate from ownership was to make sure that he was protected, not exposed. But I think in trying to protect them, they limited him in terms of what he can do. I don't know if he's ready to be a guy that can just deal primarily from the pocket extensively. I believe he has to be able to use his athleticism, because when he decides to run, he might be the fastest guy on the field. And so I believe the Titans are beginning to find that right balance where they let him do some of the things that he did very, very well at Oregon, while also kind of accelerating his development as a pocket passer to have success. He's done a great job on movement passes, a great job on what I call those throwback passes, because when they get in the red zone, you have to look for him to roll one way and throw it all the way back across the field, and they've done that. But as long as they're able to run the ball with DeMarco Murray and Derrick Henry, he is going to be successful. He runs into trouble when he has to throw 30 or more times, and he doesn't have the benefit of using play action.
No, it's interesting. I think you bring up perfect points there, Buck. The wide receiver, by the way, Tajay Sharp, the rookie out of UMass, my notes on him, went back and looked it up. He ran 4.55. I think he plays to that, don't you think?
Yeah, he plays about this speed.
6'2", 194 pounds, ran 4.55. I say he's a smooth, he's outside, can play inside, no second gear, settles in zones well, hands catcher. So just kind of a solid, dependable guy. I still don't think they have that pure number one
target
for him.
And he's actually hasn't been – what we thought he was going to be in the preseason.
Yep.
Kendall Wright has made some plays. Rashard Matthews makes some plays. The funny thing is, when I look at the Philadelphia Eagles and I look at Dorial Green Beckham, I think in Tennessee they could have used a guy like a Dorial Green Beckham, a big body space eater, a guy that can make plays down the field. They elected to let him go for whatever reason. It didn't work out there. But they're missing that marquee player on the perimeter that can change and dictate the coverage to allow Marcus Mariota to use the other guys.
One other rookie I wanted to hit on real quick. Did you see out of Denver, they said they need to get Devontae Booker the ball more? Remember all the heat I took when I said on the draft that the second they picked him, he is the most talented runner on their roster?
Absolutely.
All the C.J. Anderson apologists were all over me, man. I'm telling you, this kid is really, really talented.
He is really talented. He's a physical runner. And I was at the San Diego-Denver game, and I saw C.J. Anderson make some plays. But Devontae Booker, to me, is a plug-and-play running back, a guy that you could put in that system and he can have success. And as we're seeing from that offense, it's cool when you have Trevor Siemian or maybe a Paxton Lynch running it, but you have to be able to run the football effectively for those guys to get loose. And they need to have some juice in the running game, and maybe Devontae Booker can add to that.
All right, we're going to get Reggie in here in just a minute.
I want to ask you one question before we go to the Reggie thing, because I think this is an interesting conversation. Coming up, I guess it's foreshadowing next week when the Jaguars take on the Oakland Raiders. There was a lot of conversation about Blake Bortles and Derek Carr, and Blake Bortles had some runs, and last year we saw the production, and the collective media community, was excited about Blake Bortles' growth, and we were ready to anoint him as, oh, that's clear, when he was the number one quarterback, he should have gone first or whatever. I think some of that has come back to the pack. When you look at these two quarterbacks, Derek Carr and Blake Bortles, what do you think about each one of them, and who do you think is farther along in the development?
I think it's clearly Derek Carr is further along, in my opinion. And look, they still have hiccups. Derek Carr had a hiccup. It was not a good game for him last week against Kansas City at all. But he can make some big-time throws. And both guys, I think, have a pretty good core of guys they're throwing the ball to. I think that's similar. Obviously, I think Oakland's a little bit better up front on the offensive line. But I would definitely give the edge to Carr. Now I'm not ready to quite put him up there in that top elite echelon.
Some people talk about him like
he's, you know, MVP type candidate.
I know he's not there yet. Some of your former colleagues.
Oh, you know some folks like that put him all the way up there. No, that coffee's a little rich for me. But he can make every throw. He's got big time talent now.
And I actually I'll go on record.
He's been better than I ever thought he was going to.
Go on record and say this. Derek Carr and Blake Bortles, to me, should have carried the same grade, around the same grade on draft day. Both of those guys should have been top of the second round picks.
Yeah.
And I think the big thing with Bortles, I believe he was overdrafted. So if we go based on what the expectations are when you draft a player in the top five, he should be a franchise quarterback that is an immediate difference maker. And I don't know if he's a difference maker to that level. And so my worry and concern with him has been over a three-year period, like 2.5 years now. He still makes the same mistakes that he made coming into the league when it comes to the decision-making and the turnovers. And so you have to live with that. And so at some point you have to make a decision as you're thinking about committing long-term to this guy. Are you okay living with the gunslinger mentality and the turnovers that come with it?
All right, I'm going to play a little game here with you. talking about Blake Bortles. I'm not the biggest believer in quarterback rating, but this is just a fun little game to play. All right, so I'm gonna give you a quarterback, and you tell me right now, quarterback rating higher or lower than Blake Bortles. You ready?
Okay, here we go.
All right, first one up, Paxton Lynch. Obviously limited play time.
Higher.
Higher is correct.
I'm going on the fact that this is probably where we're going.
Let's go. Let's go. Josh McCown.
Career?
No, just this year. He's only through 33 passes this year.
Man. Jeez. Lower.
Higher. Really? Yes. Bortles. He's got a higher QB. He's one spot ahead of Blake Bortles. Jameis Winston.
Jameis has a lot of turnovers, so I'm going to go lower.
Yeah, Jameis Winston is lower. Let's go. Case Keenum's easy because he's played well. He's higher. He's much higher.
Really?
Yes. Case Keenum is several spots over him with his seven touchdowns and six picks.
You said Case Keenum has played well.
For Case Keenum.
I'm just saying, that's what you said.
Yeah. Well, I mean, somebody showed something in his last nine games. I think he's got a higher QBR than Aaron Rodgers does over his last
Brian Hoyer
games.
Has one, too, though.
Bro, you don't mess with Brian. Brian, somebody told Brian Hoyer this is the preseason. I'm convinced.
Oh, I mean, until it gets real. He's going to ball out until it really, really matters.
Yeah. Brian Hoyer, though, he's the perfect backup, but he's one of those – he's that level of quarterback where if you buy into thinking that that's the guy, you are making a big mistake. Go get yourself
– And they're buying in already.
In like, Chicago, he's the guy built around?
Oh, look, he's better than Jay Cutler and all that. Look, Jay Cutler's issues are his issues, but – if we're picking up the ball in the park and you say, Buck, you got first pick, and my quarterback options are Jay Cutler and Brian Hoyer, I'm going to take Jay Cutler all day, every day.
Ryan Fitzpatrick, higher or lower?
Ryan Fitzpatrick has to be lower. Yes. He has to be. He has so many turnovers.
He is.
It has to be lower.
He is lower. Okay, you win. I'll stop that game right there.
It's probably a tie.
Hey, let me tell everybody what the videos we have out, because we got a bunch of videos coming up today on NFL.com/MTS video, as well as on the YouTube channel. We've got a video up on Dak. We got a video coming up on the top three running backs from this week. We have one on what's wrong with Aaron Rodgers, which is a popular topic. So we won't get into it here, but you can check out the video for that one. Here's what good one. Who would you rather have? Who's better, Rob Gronkowski or Odell Beckham? We're going to bring Reggie in for that one. We'll bring him in for that video. And then also from Undrafted, the series on NFL Network, we have Mike Bercovici, the former Arizona State quarterback. So we've got, what, five videos?
Yeah, we got some nice videos. But look, even to go back to the conversation with Dak Prescott, you need to check out the Mood of Sticks 360.
Ooh, good call.
That we did on Dak Prescott, where we really dug into his background, talked to his coaches, high school coach, talked to Dan Mullen. Really get a lot of perspective on why he's been able to jump in right away and have a tremendous amount of success for the Cowboys.
Arjuna, we got to blast that one out again. Let's get some more buzz. Let's see if we can get the second round of viewers on the Dak Prescott.
Right. Oh yeah, we can do that.
We're on the front end of that.
Yeah, we got to get that rolling. All right, what do you say? We bring in Reggie. Is that good? Arjuna, is he here?
Yeah, but before we do that, we have some audio from last Tuesday where
we
talked about the confidence of between UNC and
absolutely.
Miami, and we're gonna play that to get us.
Oh yes, that's producing right there.
So here it is.
UNC Miami on a scale of 1 to 10, how confident?
Oh,
are
I guarantee
you
win.
Oh, guaranteed 10.
You gonna? Oh, I guarantee
straight to
you
a
win.
10.
No
he
spread.
Went
straight
to
up.
A 10.
Straight
guaranteed
to a 10.
Rich.
We right there.
Well, how we both gonna go tens? Because I got a 10 that we going.
I mean,
wow.
No, I mean, I'm thinking of angry Tar Heel bunch. Are we down? Down in Miami?
Yeah, come on down south.
Oh, that's perfect for us. That's perfect for us. I mean, I think it might get ugly.
All right, hey.
It would have gotten ugly if it didn't rain in the middle of the game.
We were coming back.
The can was open.
We were coming.
The can
back.
Was open, and then they got a couple friendly calls. They got a targeting penalty on Braxton Berrios.
Hey,
that extended a drive, and then some other things kind of happened. But that should have been, and in my estimation, we should have put a 40 burger on him.
Listen.
We should have hung a 40.
What do you say, Reg?
He can't say anything.
They prayed for rain.
They prayed for rain. The week before DJ saw us, we got eight.
They're terrible in the rain.
We don't want the rain. Like the thing that was just saving grace. You know what? I'm gonna go back to my old coach. My old coach Marty Schottenheimer said, you know, when you win, you say nothing.
When you lose, you say less. Is that it?
So you don't want
it's
to
Virginia
say
it like that. It's Virginia.
You're on Virginia. You're moving on to Virginia.
Wow. We're on to Virginia.
I like that.
We're on to Virginia.
But, you know, sometimes, you know, we understand that North Carolina was going through some tough times down there. You know, so sometimes you
looking out for a neighbor. That's all.
To, you know what I mean? I like North Carolina. I got a lot of friends that.
Hey, we could have used you. We could have used you back in the day. You'd have been a nice number two receiver on the. He would have been. I think during this time, like I think we may have had like LC Stevens or somebody like that, someone that he's never heard from. But like we could have had Reggie being the blocking back.
Oh, man.
He could have been the blocking wide receiver. Man.
But you know, it was a good game. It obviously didn't turn out the way I wanted it to turn out, you know, but right when I felt like we were starting to make our comeback, it started storming. And then all of a sudden we dropped like three balls in a row.
Oh, those guys. Like,
yeah. We
like,
started dropping like, three balls in a row.
Okay, like, so like, what was funny?
I didn't see it. I haven't seen the game.
So what was funny about watching, it started monsooning. It was like the classic South Florida rain.
Yeah.
And it was coming down in droves and buckets. And you saw all the guys take the gloves off, and right away they're going right. It's going right through their hands. Three and out.
I'm like, here we go. And you know, I remember I went on Twitter and I said, you know, this is what wide receivers do not want.
Mm-hmm.
We don't want the ball when it's pouring down rain.
No,
hey, don't throw me the ball.
He's throwing.
You try and body catch it more?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah, they're trying to
catch it. They're trying to catch it with their hands.
And I knew that was a no-no.
And it was and like he said, it was a monsoon.
It was a no-no.
This is the only time I say, okay, body catching is okay with me.
And a quarterback has to know, hey, man.
Put it on.
Put it on me.
Yeah.
Put the thing – it has to be right in here on me, and it wasn't.
All right, Reg, two questions, and then I'm going to let you get out of here because we've got you running all over the network today. Again, thanks, though, for coming on a video. We got a video with the Gronk and OBJ, and he's the judge. I'm not going to give away which way he goes, but I am smiling.
He didn't go to right.
I am smiling right now on the audio podcast.
He didn't go to right.
What do they need in recruiting right now to get competitive, and how many years would it take for Miami to get back to being not a good team, but a national championship caliber team that you played on?
I think they're in the right direction. I really do. They got a bunch of young guys. They got all freshmen linebackers.
They got some running
backs.
Those
two backs ran over my App State squad. Yeah. I know that much.
Those two running backs.
We got, I think, all of the right areas, you know, locked. I think we can use a couple more receivers.
Mm-hmm.
I really do.
What they're missing at wide receiver, they're missing, like, that dude.
Yeah.
Like, the one dude that's out there, and then all the other guys can, like, get one-on-ones because everyone is focused on that guy.
Yeah.
If they had one of those dudes – and what's interesting, in South Florida, there have been a bunch of those dudes come out.
They're all
but those guys
for Alabama.
Are going to Alabama. Yeah. Yeah. So they got to do a better job of putting a fence up to make sure those guys don't leave.
And I think that now – We have the right staff in place to keep those guys in, you know, south. You know, we would lose those guys, and we would always say, you know, all our alums would say, man, how do we lose an Amari Cooper? Like, how do we let him out of there?
Should never have.
You know, so now I think we got the right recruiting staff in place. I think with the respect of head coach, right, he can get it done. I think we in the right direction.
For those who don't remember how unbelievable your team is, and I'll let you go on this one. You were telling a story in Greenwood the other day, which normally keeps things in the locker room, but this one was too good. I'm going to make you share it.
Yep.
Just the culture of the team you had and the talent you had there.
Yep.
You were talking about how you don't care if you were hurt at the wide receiver position.
Listen,
you weren't going to miss any time because of one guy.
It didn't matter what position, honestly,
mm-hmm.
you know, because we were stacked. We, you know, it didn't matter. If you – our motto – was if you get hurt, you're bad because you probably won't see the field again. Yeah. And then you look at, you know, it's me and it's Santana Moss. We there together and we're playing. And there's a baby Andre Johnson who's the same size in college, you know, that he is now. You know, so I'm not letting him get on that field. I'm going, hey, my knee hurts. That's all right. I'm going to limp the rest of this game.
Yeah, he's not letting
I'm
him in
not
there.
I'm not letting him in there because I won't play.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of people don't understand. We had a guy named Darryl McMillan who was from Bradenton, Florida, who played running back. He broke his collarbone, right? And then Edgerrin James stepped in. Then all of a sudden, Darryl McMillan's collarbone was healed,
yeah.
right? Say, coach, I'm back.
Deuces.
All right, now you're the fullback. He like, I'm not playing fullback. He transferred.
Yeah.
That's just how it went. Like, that happened all over the place.
That could happen again, though. I mean, with all the high school talent down there.
They told me that Frank Gore was the guy that ran Willis McGahee out, Clinton Portis out.
You got to realize, right, we would sit up there. We had what we call a toilet bowl, mm-hmm. right? So we would have a toilet bowl would be, like, towards the end of the year where we got the guys that really didn't play.
you know, during the season. They'll have like a live scrimmage. Our toilet bowl was Willis McGahee, Jonathan Vilma. I mean, the list goes on.
Yeah.
It just goes, you know, like these guys are premier athletes.
Pro Bowl players.
Pro Bowl guys that play in the league. And that, I mean, I can keep going with that list. Offensive lineman, Vernon Carey, that another I mean, it went on and on. And that's just how it was. It was always somebody in the batter's box on deck. Right? That was ready and was hungry to take your job.
I hope they get back, man, because that was fun. Those are fun days watching you.
I think they're headed in the right
direction. I hope they get back so we can keep whooping them.
By the way, you didn't bring any Carolina gear.
I appreciate it. I forgot. And it was only good for a week, so don't worry, it's about to expire.
But you know, right now it's been an annual thing, so it's not that big. But like we're going on two years in a row, maybe three out of four. I mean, I don't know. I can't
hold up. Let me look at the. By the way, congratulations, October 18th, and they're still talking about the football team in Carolina.
Congratulations on that. And he knows when basketball comes.
Hey, nah. You know our basketball team is on the rise now.
They are. They are. You always have them, like, those old dudes.
Yeah, that's all right. They get it done
they
now.
They got them old dudes playing. That's all right. Jim Larry Nagle. Those dudes. Look, I will give them credit. Their basketball team has been good because, who was it, Barry Larkin's son,
yes.
Shane Larkin?
Yes. Yeah.
I want to say they won the ACC then, and last year they were pretty good.
It was pretty solid. Yeah. You don't expect that from the basketball team, but.
All right, we'll talk some college hoops as we go forward because my Hoosiers are going to be good.
Uh-oh.
All right. Thanks, Reg. I appreciate you stopping by again.
Thank you, guys.
All right, Buck. Well, you got to gloat. You got to enjoy it a little bit. And I'll tell you what. I thought that I would catch up to you in the pool. We'll do the pool.
You had a good week.
I did. I didn't think I did, but they sent out the results.
Eight and three.
Yeah, the three losses.
See, my Wisconsin, my Badgers, the Fighting Buckies.
Yeah.
Didn't.
You had some good calls though. But see, I thought because we had North Carolina games, you would go with your heart, get those wrong, and I'd be able to catch up a little bit. But you keep getting those right, man.
Well, yeah. Hopefully, they're not on the ledger. Let's keep them off the slate.
Well, whatever they pick, I said. I sent out a text. I'm just cutting and pasting all your picks this week.
Arkansas did me right. Now, this week is a little tougher because we got some tougher games.
Yeah, we got some good ones. We'll discuss all that on the next episode. But it's been a fun one today, Buck. Again, we got a bunch of videos for everybody to check out. Thanks to Reggie Wayne for stopping by. And we will be back later this week for another episode. Be sure to download the podcast or subscribe to it on iTunes. You can find all the videos, again, NFL.com/MTSvideo, as well as NFL channel on YouTube. Thanks. We'll see you next time.
Thanks for downloading Move the Sticks with Daniel Jeremiah and Bucky Brooks. For more, go to NFL.com/podcasts.